This is Karen Musgrave, and I'm doing a Quilters SOS Save Our Stories interview with Diana Bracey. Diana is in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm in Naperville, Illinois, so we're conducting this interview over the telephone. Today's date is December 9th, 2008. It is now 3:09 in the afternoon. And Diana, thank you so much for taking time to do this interview with me.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, and please tell me about your quilt, Living the Dream.
Okay. The quilt, Living the Dream, actually started with me meeting and shaking hands with our President-elect Obama. We attended a ceremony. It's actually was here in Las Vegas. It's called Living the Dream. It was sponsored by Macy's. It was the 25th annual celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And he actually was a surprise visitor for us. We were told that some of the local politicians might stop in to do a speech. And we were seated at a dinner. And I was at the table along the very front, and in walks Senator Obama. The crowd just went crazy, and I was at the front table. It's a huge table at the front in the podium. Of course, he spoke, and we were totally mesmerized. And he was probably, I would say, about 25 feet from me. His Secret Service and everyone were there. And at the end of his speech, it was just, I had chills, just chills. I just felt so totally unreal and just so connected to him. I felt as though I can actually touch him, which I've never felt before, you know, even with politics and listening to everybody's stories. I felt that they were just so far away from me that if I said hello, they'd never hear my voice. Even if Las Vegas said hello, they'd never hear us. But I felt a connection with him. And after he spoke, he was at the top of the podium going along the line with the dignitaries, and he was shaking hands with them, and it was wonderful. And there was a rope between our tables and the podium. As he walked down the stairs, I was taking pictures. I thought, oh, my God, I hope Secret Service doesn't, like, take my camera or something. But I was nervous, and I took a picture, and he walked directly over to me and extended his hand. And I was like, oh, my God. I dropped my camera. I think I don't know what happened to it. But he grabbed my hand, and I shook his hand. And even with his other hand, he held mine. He looked directly into my eyes, and he says, thank you. And I said, you're welcome. I didn't know what else to say. I was so dumbfounded. And then he started going down the line, and everybody started coming up because we didn't expect that we were going to be able to touch him. So as he was walking down, shaking hands with everyone, I found my camera, I started to take pictures, and my heart was just going pitter-patter, and I said to myself, I knew I could touch him. I didn't mean literally touch him, but I felt that if we told Senator Obama our stories, that he would listen to our woes, he would listen to the problems that we were having, and he would take it to a higher step. I felt like he was a person. And indeed, when he touched me and shook my hand and looked into my eyes, I was like, he is a person. And when I looked at him, I thought, I do mosaic art, and I do famous faces and regular faces, and I have just got to capture this face in my mosaic photography. And that is what inspired me to do his image. I had to do it. Now, as far as my art is concerned, what I do is called mosaic fabric photography, and it's taking a photo, and in the photo, I translate that into pixels onto the computer. From the pixels, I figure out what's light and what's dark and what's medium and trace around the pixels in order to get an image. And using that, I take fabrics and I match the light, medium, and dark fabrics, cut them all up into tiny pieces, fuse the back of it, and replace them again. So really, when I'm done, the mosaic looks like a painting. And in fact, even if you stand close to it, you think I painted it until you touch it. When you touch it, you realize it's actually fabric. It's very flat, and I had done Dr. Martin Luther King, and I also did the Kennedy Brothers. Now, the Kennedy Brothers, I did win a local award. It's international here. It's a Boulder It was Boulder City International Festival, and that was last year. As I was making the Obama mosaic, I was looking at the Kennedy brothers, and it's the one where their heads are together and they look as though they're whispering. I had that hanging on the wall, and then I had Dr. Martin Luther King's image hanging on the wall. So as I was working on Obama, I felt as though I was connecting those important people. They all meant something different to me, and they all had a major impact on my life at some time or another. And in working with each and every one of them, I felt some sort of kindred spirit, I guess for lack of better words. I felt as though they all had the same dream. Dr. King wasn't able to be able to live the dream, but he knew that it was going to happen. I knew that it was going to happen. My father knew it was going to happen, but I didn't believe that it was going to happen in my lifetime. Now, looking at Senator Obama, President-elect now, and doing that mosaic of him, I felt as though they were all in the same room. It was such a feeling, I can't even begin to explain. It was surreal. As I was working on his face, I could just see it. I could just see it come together. And when I was done with it, I hung them on each wall in my room and turned around and looked at all of them. And I just felt as though I was in just the perfect place. Dr. Martin Luther King started the speech, and I wasn't there to listen, but I've heard it over and over and over again. I'm 54 years old. And in listening to Senator Obama, President-elect now, I feel as though he's taken the torch, that he's taken Dr. King's torch, and he's taking it on, and not just his, but what we all want for the world, like me, just a plain person, just to be able to come together as one and be able to get this right this time. It's all about the people, and that is why I'm so drawn to him. That is what made me do his image, and even now it's emotional to even talk about these great men right now. So I felt as though I had to capture that moment, and I did it, and I'm so happy with what I've done.
So what are your plans for this quilt?
Well, actually, as soon as I made the quilt, somebody saw it somewhere and asked if I could show it at Houston International Fall Festival, which was in Houston, Texas this past October, the end of October and the beginning of November. It was there in a show called Patchwork Politics. So I said, sure, it can go to Houston. I was really excited because this is a show I've always wanted to be involved in and never thought I had the skills to actually be able to knit a quilt to be accepted. So when they call out for Patchwork Quilts, he made it, and I wasn't able to attend Houston Festival, but when I came and turned on my computer the day of the opening, I received so many emails about the quilt, and everybody told me it was so wonderful. They'd never seen anything like it, so it made its debut for the first time there. And actually, I received the quilt back from Houston about 2 weeks ago, and I really would love for, you know, our President-elect Obama to have it. I mean, it's his. If not, then it's going to just travel. I have a couple of dates that people would like for the quilt to be shown, such as what Karen, is it Karen Whalen, I think?
No, Sue.
Sue Whalen, what she's doing in Bethesda for part of the inauguration. My quilt will be shown there as well. So it can travel, or if he'd like to have it, it will be his. Otherwise, I'll have it here in my house and cherish it forever.
Have you contacted him?
To Obama?
Yes.
Oh, no, I have not. In fact, I have not. No. But I think I will, because everybody is saying now, everybody's blogging. People that I don't even know are blogging to me about the quilt, and they're saying, oh, my God, this would be so great. You should contact them to see if he'd like to have the quilt. In actuality, I'm working on another one now, hopefully to get done with the show, that has Michelle and Obama. It's a beautiful picture, and I'll be done with it in about a week. So if there's room, I'll have another one, and if not that one, maybe he'd like to have one of Michelle and himself, you know, so I'll be done with that one very soon.
Oh, very nice.
Yes, yes.
So tell me about your interest in quilt making.
Well, my interest in quilt making started about 15 years ago. And a friend of mine, my best friend of almost 40 years, was quilting. She just started quilting, and I do believe we were in our early 40s maybe. And I thought maybe quilting was for old ladies. That's what I always thought. And I told her, you know, we're too young to quilt. She goes, no, it's fun. And even though we're the youngest people in our group, you know, it's great. So she purchased all the equipment, and I decided to take a quilt class. And when I took the class, I couldn't learn. For some reason, the lady and I, I couldn't understand what she was telling me to do. Because in quilting, there's a certain terminology that you use that you don't normally hear. The names of the blocks you talk about, even a rotary cutter, or you're talking about things that I'd never heard of before. So I thought, I'm not ready for a class. What I am good at is reading. So I purchased just about every how-to book, went home, I learned the terminology, and then I began to understand what the instructor was trying to explain to me. She was speaking in quilter's terms, and I didn't understand, and that was the lack of communication. I was taking probably an intermediate class, and maybe I should have taken a beginner's class so they could start from step one. I was a seamstress, and I knew about sewing clothing, but quilting is totally different. The seam allowances are different. The supplies are different. And, of course, the books are different. Terminology, everything. So once I did that and I learned so much in reading the books myself, then I thought, well, let me try and make a quilt. So I made my first little miniature quilt, and it was more of a traditional quilt. It was the dark colors, the log cabin quilts, the monkey wrench. These are all names of blocks that were somewhat traditional, and it had colors like plaids and what we call calico, which are kind of the old-fashioned look. And it was nice, but it didn't wow me. So what I decided to do was try brighter colors, something bright, something vivid, something jewel tone. And using the same actual patterns, I made the blocks, and then they turned out like, wow. And I'm thinking, now this is what I want. This is what I'm looking for. I need that wow factor, not something older and traditional, which is okay for some people, and I can appreciate it. However, I had to feel as though I was making something that I enjoyed making. So in doing that, I thought, I love these vivid colors. I love these wild colors, except now I want to do something that's kind of artsy. So I started doing something called color wash quilts, and it's also called watercolor quilts. And with that, you're cutting little squares of floral fabric, and you're reproducing a bouquet of some sort. And again, that was more artsy, maybe a bird bath with a bird in it, all made with flowers, and then tone on tones, which are just background fabrics that reads as a solid color, but there's depth to it. So it looks like a scene. And I thought, great, this is exactly what I'm doing. And I was getting more excited. This is what I wanted to do. Then I decided to try to do a face, a picture, somebody's face in fabric to reproduce that. That's when I met Tammy Bowser. She wrote the book Simply Amazing Quilted Photography. And she and I became friends. And in her book, you actually can transform ordinary photographs into heirloom quilts that look like paintings. Now, it was called more of a mosaic because the edges were jagged, the way a mosaic tile floor would look, or something like mosaic glass would look. So it pretty much had a little stair-step look on the edges. And after that, I thought, oh, my God, this is absolutely amazing. So I started teaching the class. And then, again, Tammy and I met a couple of years later, and she did a face of a person. I believe it was Duke Ellington, and the edges were smooth, not jagged like stair steps or tiles, but literally smooth out, and she showed me the process of how to do that, and I was just passionate. Then I knew that was for me. So I've been doing that now for 5 years. I've done lots of faces. Each one gets better than the next, and I've tried wild colors, and I absolutely love it. And with Obama's face, when you look at it, it actually does look like a painting, even though there's smooth cut edges, and literally it takes thousands of pieces of fabric to accomplish this. My fabrics are probably as small as a quarter of an inch. I mean, you can literally put it on your fingernail, and if you sneeze, they would all blow away. So really, you just breathe normally while you're doing the work. I sneezed a lot, and things were going all over the place, and you find it again, put it back in place, and it's like, oh, my God. But you find it again, and each and every little piece means something. It could be just a little white part that's right in the middle of the pupil of an eye, and I can capture that. So the more I do it, the better I become. And when I look at a human face, a regular face, I'm looking at how I can recreate that face and which colors I would use. Not your skin colors, but something that's totally different, totally off the wall. Like Obama is blues and mauves and purple. And actually, you can see his image even though the colors are not his skin color. And that is what makes me passionate about what I do, creating and creating.
So how is it quilted?
Actually, it is not quilted. You can quilt it. Tammy quilts hers, Tammy Bowser.
Mm-hmm.
What she does is she quilts the top. She does an overall quilting over the top, and she gives it a different texture to the quilt. But my method is actually not quilting it at all. I put the bindings on the actual edge of it. I like the flat look. It can be quilted, and some of my students do quilt their work, and it looks really nice, but it actually changes the texture of the face. And I just prefer mine to look more like a painting, flat, but it can indeed be quilted. So my edges are really what's bounded in thread, not anything on the face at all.
So whose works are you drawn to and why?
Well,
besides
I
Tammy.
Well, the first one I did was my husband. I wanted to see if I could capture his face. Of course, I've been married to him for almost 34 years, and it's a face I see and love every day, and he has a beard. And I thought, oh, my goodness, if I could recapture this face with the beard and actually have it look like hair, then I think I'm doing something. So I looked, and I thought, this is great. So I looked at the picture, and I actually did it, and it looked okay. However, it was quite large, and I couldn't really see the image when you're looking at it. And then I stepped away about 5 feet, 6 feet. I turned around, and all of a sudden his face appeared. And I was like, oh, my God. It's almost as though if you stand closer, it becomes more like an abstract painting. And if you stand further apart because of the distance, you can actually see the depth of the photo, and you can make out the face.
So how big was your husband?
My husband is probably maybe 36 by maybe 42.
Okay, and Obama's, the Living the Dream is 14 and a half by 18 and a
yes,
half.
Yes, it's smaller. And actually, it's smaller. I made it smaller because I thought you would be able to see it in a closer area than
okay.
maybe as large as my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I also thought that making it smaller would make it less time-consuming and easier. In actuality, it doesn't because the actual pixels and the pieces I use are much smaller in Obama than it is in my husband. So it's easier to make a bigger one. Now, here in Las Vegas, most of the homes have cathedral height ceilings, so you're able to see it from a distance because of size. Now, the smaller ones like Obama, you could stand right next to it and see exactly what it is. But the farther away you stand, the closer, the more you can see the actual image come out. So it's more like a 3D, and even if you look through a camera lens right at the picture, it looks 3D. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen, and until you've seen it, it's hard to even imagine. If you're far away from it, you can actually see the picture. As you start to come closer, you're standing there like, oh, that looked like a picture from that distance. So I made them smaller so you can actually stay in the same room and still see what the picture is.
So describe your studio.
My studio is my apartment home. I have two rooms. I work in a small area. I actually use a tray as small as a TV tray. And I also have a sewing table, maybe 4 feet. That's what I call my big table. because the pieces are so small, I'm able to put it on a table, and I use a little mini iron to fuse the pieces down. I use the mini iron, so I have two stations set up, one in the extra bedroom that I have here, and normally I have two mosaics going on at one time. So if I'm in the room with my husband watching TV, I've got another one in there, and if I go to another part of my house, there's another mosaic. For instance, right now I just finished Dizzy Gillespie, which I love the way he's coming out, and I'm getting ready to start on Michelle and Barack Obama. So I'm going to go ahead and get them going. And after that, I have, oh gosh, I can't even imagine how many more faces I have already printed that I'm ready to start on. I'm doing a jazz series. So I'm trying to get, I've done Louis Armstrong and Betsy Smith and people like that. So I'm drawn to the jazz scene. And because all of these things have been happening throughout my life, I stopped to make other things, such as Barack Obama. And then when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s celebration came up in January, I did one because of that. And I thought, well, let me just do the Kennedys, too, because, I mean, after all, I did do them, and I did do Obama and everybody else. Why not make it a political scene? So I stray a little bit, but I always go back to my jazz scene. I have patterns for John Coltrane. I'm going to be doing Ella Fitzgerald. I have Duke Ellington completed. And every now and again, maybe every 1 or 2 months, I do get a commission to do someone else's photo. I'm doing commissions of people, their animals, or maybe grandkids, or even their own faces. So I stop my regular work and get back to doing a commission, and then come back again. So I'm constantly working on one or two pieces of art at a time.
How much fabric do you have?
I have a lot. I have a lot. In my closet here in my hallway, I have a shelf, and it's full of batik fabrics, which is what I prefer to use. Batik fabrics are better than the calico. Even though the calico fabrics would work, it'll give it more of a different look. The batik fabrics looks more like hand-painted fabrics, and there's such a variety of colors in those fabrics. I could probably use one piece of fabric and get 10 or 15 colors out of it. And that is what I love doing, because it's kind of difficult to look at a batik fabric and say, that would be great for the area of the cheek, even though they're different colors. One cheek may have greens and blues, and the other cheek may have the darker shade of the same color, or it may even be a yellow or an orange in the other cheek. And as long as the values of the fabric work, the color doesn't matter. So I use color value and hues rather than actual colors of the fabric. I'm drawn to the color, but I'm looking at the value to decide whether I would like to have that to be a lighter spot, maybe the shine from the camera lens on the forehead or on the nose, and then the shadow of the nose area, the eyebrows, the lips, the background are all much darker, so I would use dark blues or blacks or dark purples or something that's dark in that particular area, and that's what brings the faces out. If you're using the different tones of the face, light, medium, and dark, and gradations between those colors, the face will definitely come out. So in my closet, I have rows and rows of batik fabric. I have a storage unit, probably the largest one, which shelves the fabric. It's not all batiks because I do other quilts sometimes. But now I believe I don't even want those fabrics. I need to go back and reload and get batik fabrics. But
how much yardage do you typically buy when you buy something?
Not much at all. Probably about when I'm buying, if I see something that I like, depending on where I am, I'll buy it. A small piece, if I'm here in a local area, a yard would do. A yard would probably make several pieces. I choose probably, I start out with about 9 different batik fabrics. Even though there are only 9 fabrics, it looks like there may be 40 fabrics in there, 40 different fabrics in there. In actuality, there are only 9 fabrics in a face. I try to use odd numbers that seems to work because I divide them into light, medium, and dark, which would be 3 light, 3 medium, 3 dark. Every now and again, I might do 12 colors. just to give it a little more jazz, a little more color in it. But it's unnecessary, really, to get the faces. It's just I want to get a little deeper with the color. For instance, Obama, I believe I only used 9 fabrics. Well, with the one I'm making now with Michelle and Obama, I'm using, I believe, 15 fabrics. And I'm doing that because when I looked at the face, I thought there was a couple of little light spots, one in his nose and one in his forehead that I didn't want to use. And I thought, no, if I add more colors, then I could diffuse that light spot. And that's exactly what happened. When I looked at it, I thought, I'm going to have to go with more fabrics in order to spread it out a little bit more and not have just a light white spot on the tip of his nose or on his forehead. So I could actually look at the fabric and determine, this would be great in that area and this would be great in that area. So the fabric selection is also a key in choosing these mosaics.
Do you belong to any article groups?
I actually belong to one here. It's called Desert Cultures of Nevada, and it's probably about 400 or 500 members in the actual guild. Now, the guild consists of several circles, and the circles are different people that are interested in particular things. None of the circles really pertain to the kind of art that I do, so most of my time is really spent teaching at a local large chain clothing store here. I do teach how to do the mosaic photography, but the groups are centered on either applique, or they're doing traditional, or they're doing miniatures, which I do love. They're using scrappy, so there's a scrap happy group. So I don't seem to fit in any particular group, so if I would attend, it would pretty much be to see what everybody else is doing in the quilting world. So it's taking my head in, and they're seeing what I'm doing in the same time. But it's just me, all alone, here in my house, just enjoying this art. So I do it right here.
Now, do you think of yourself more as an artist or a quilt maker, or do you even make the distinction?
Well, it's a touchy situation with other people, I'm finding. I considered myself a quilter. However, about 6 months ago, I started online, and I started listing my quilts for sale. I call them quilts. And everybody else that looked at them said, this is more of a fiber art. You're more of an artist. And I thought, oh, I am? I didn't consider myself an artist. And I said, well, I'm a quilter, but I can't really, I don't know how to paint. I don't know how to draw. To me, that's an artist. I didn't think making a quilt made me an artist. However, I was convinced to join this group. It's called Boulder City Museum, and it's a group of ladies that said, Diana, I believe you should join our fine arts festival. I'm thinking with my quilts? And they said, yes, indeed. We think so. I said, oh, but I'm not an artist. They said, well, give it a try because we believe that you are. And I had faces, you know, of famous faces, and I sent photos, and they actually accepted it. And I thought, oh, my God. I thought, all right, I set up my booth with all of these other artists. They were probably, I think, 100 or so, and they were from seven different southwestern states, and they had sculptures and paintings and everything imaginable. So as I was unloading my art, I was almost embarrassed to put it up because I thought, this doesn't go with anything, and I'm just so ashamed, and my husband convinced me, no, your work is beautiful. I thought, okay, well, I know that there were judges coming around the booth because they were writing notes and whispering to each other, and I was shaking in my boots thinking they're going to close my shop up and say, you need to go home. And I was so nervous. They came back 3 times, and after the 3rd time, they were asking my husband the spelling of my last name, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm petrified. And during the show, they were announcing awards, and they called my name. They called me for the Kennedy Brothers. I called in whispering with the two brothers' heads together, and I won a fine arts award for that. And they consider me an artist. And they says, you could put that in your resume. You could put it on your business cards, on your stationery. You are an award-winning fine artist. And it took me 3 months to even say it. It took me 3 months. And all of the other artists said that they were coming to the show for over 20 years, and they had not received an award yet, and this was my very first solo show. And once they gave me the award and this huge ribbon, and I put it on the Kennedy's picture, and all of these people were coming, and it was just amazing, the amount of people and the amount of the attention, and nobody's seen anything like this before. So from that point on, they said I can call myself an artist, and I think that I'm feeling a little more comfortable with it now, but I'm still a quilter. I'm still a quilter.
I think that's nice. It's a great story.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So what advice would you offer someone starting out?
If you're starting out as a quilter, I would say start at the beginning level. It's wonderful to have hands-on instruction. However, just be sure that the instructor is accustomed to starting out with new quilters, because it can be intimidating and there is so much to learn. However, I will say that it is addictive. Once you get started, you are in. It's just sometimes finding your style. Learning how to quilt is the beginning. They teach you all of the basics, you know, your fabrics and your tools of the trade. They show you how to get your seams correctly, how to lay your block, and even how to quilt it in the end from start to finish. So make sure you're starting at a beginning level. And read books. I've read books. I have every type of quilting book I ever want to read and more. I'd like to have more. And each artist or quilter has their own way of doing things. And I have also noticed that some teachers that you go to, they prefer to teach their method. But just understand that, you know, learn their method, but everybody has their own methods. And you, as a quilter or an artist, will find your own. You'll find your own method of doing things. And just be creative and just have fun with it, because I am still having fun 15 years later.
What do you think is the biggest challenge confronting quilt makers today?
Well, today, the challenge really is the economy, I think. And because quilting is actually, it's not a cheap hobby or art form. It is and can be expensive. You need particular tools for various, you know, blocks. If you want to do a particular thing, you have to have so much. And a lot of people now are cutting back on the amount they would buy notions that come out. We couldn't wait until something new would come out, and everybody would stop and just buy it. Now I find that people are slowing down a little bit. Rather than buying a new pack of blades for the rotary cutter, for instance, they'll buy the sharpener to sharpen the blades themselves rather than buying a new pack, which we would never think of reusing or sharpening. And also scraps. Normally, people give their scraps away or they give their fabrics away. And what people are doing now, instead of giving away, is they're trading. Like if you go into groups and there's a particular fabric or group of fabrics, you just thought, I'm not going to use this again. You will trade with someone else. So really you come home with your own stash. And it's I find that people are recycling more. People are using them more for, when I started quilting, which I called my young age, because my friend and I were we were the youngest two in the bunch. We were working with women that were like, you know, 10, 15, 20 years older than we are. And even they were saying the same thing. They used to use quilts to cover up with and for warmth, for utilitarian purposes. Whereas when I started quilting, we were doing it more for an art form, more to show, more to present at a quilt show, to be judged, to be shown, almost like you can't touch my quilt. It's an art kind of form. And now it's just starting to change where somebody needs a quilt for their bed, and they're actually using the quilt. And my dad, even, I made a quilt for him when I first started, and he says to me, oh, I have my quilt, and it's starting to just, you know, really look like it's going to be a little tattered on the edges. I said, oh, he's hinting for a new quilt. So I thought, oh, I'll make you a new quilt. I'll make another one. But I think that people are now recycling with all of the merchandise I have in here. My glues, my scissors, all of those things are expensive. I am not going to go out and buy the new handled dinger that comes out, which normally I'll buy the collector's pair each year it comes out. I have probably 20 pairs a year. So I am not going to go out and buy any because I can't afford to do it right now. But I have so much merchandise in here. I have so many pairs of scissors and so much fabric and so many hundreds of spools of threads. I really wouldn't have to go out and buy anything at all should I choose to make quilt after quilt after quilt, everything I have already.
What kind of fusible do you use?
I use about three different types. I use Seamathene 2. Now, Seamathene 2 is great because it's repositional. So if you should put a piece of fabric down and it's in the wrong place or it's askew and you'd like to straighten it up, you would just pick it up, put it down, and then fuse it. Now, that's more expensive, so the steam seam works as well, and that actually is just one-sided, so once you fuse it down, it's permanent. Now, my absolute favorite for what I do, my fabric mosaics, is heat and bond. And the heat and bond, I use the lightweight, and it's actually still pliable, it's soft, if it's drapeable if you use it, and normally I buy it by the bolt. So I have bolts of that that I keep. That's my absolute favorite. The back of the fabric almost looks like it's coated with Teflon, or it has a really nice bond so that when I use my iron on it, it bonds perfectly well. I prefer that. The Steamathene, I did notice that when I'm using that, sometimes the back of it has a webbing that doesn't quite fuse too well with fabric, and if you use the iron too hot, you've lost your bond, and you'd have to start all over again. So my absolute perfect right now is heat and bond. And I just use the back of the fabrics, and once I've used the back of the fabrics, I use a tricot behind that, and that's actually my base or my foundation, and the tricot is also fusible. So they adhere to each other. So the fusible backing on the fabric and the fusible tricot adhere. And once you're done, you have something that you can literally just quilt, or you can frame it, or put a binding around it and hang it and just dust it off. And I also use a UV protectant spray to resist fading on it. And it has an acrylic coat on top of that, so it protects it, you know, pretty much from the sunlight.
So what does your husband think of your quilt making?
Oh, my. My husband is, he's my biggest fan. He is my staunchest supporter, and he's a quiet man. He's a gentleman, and he doesn't say much. He 3 years ago, he says, you know, maybe you should start, you know, quilting. I thought, you know, on a full-time basis. And he said, that's what you'd love to do. It's been your dream job. So for the last 3 years, he's pretty much has been supporting me, supporting the beginning of my small business. So he has been there for me. And I really didn't know specifically what he thought about it. He would say, it's nice, I love it, it's beautiful, and that was it. How I found out how my husband feels about my quilting is at the Zane show last year. My husband went with me pretty much to help me get my tent set up. And he was going to hang around with me for a while. I had another friend that was going to join me. Well, it was really busy throughout the show, and my husband kept saying, why don't you eat? And I said, okay, I can't. Well, when I get excited, I don't eat and can't eat. And not to mention, it was so busy, I was constantly talking about how I do what I do. And I had piles of food stacking up. My husband would get me something to eat. Finally, he says, no, you step away from the booth, and you sit in a chair right here, and I insist you sit and you eat and you drink your water and relax. I'll talk to everybody. Now, my husband is a personal shopper at Macy's, so he's used to dealing with people, talking to people, and I didn't have a problem with that. My issue was I didn't know if my husband could explain my process so that they would be able to understand what I did, because he never really talked to me. I would talk to him constantly. Well, I sat there, and I heard my husband say, oh, hi, how are you? Well, this is called fabric photography. My wife uses the mosaic method, and she actually uses a heat and bond and back, and she uses batik fabric. Not only that, it takes her about 40 hours to complete a small one such as this size, and she's doing this, and I was blown away. If you stand back, you'll see depth of field. Look through this camera. Look through your camera lens. You can see what I mean. My husband was going on, and my mouth was wide open, and he was attracting a crowd of people, and there were so many people in my booth, they had to stand outside. He had the crowd going. He said, look at this. What do you think? You think this is a pain? Now feel it. And I was like, oh, my God. So then I stood there. I thought, well, I should get up and help him because there's so many people around the booth. They can't possibly all hear him and listen to him. And he has a booming voice when he wants to. So his voice was booming, and they were looking, yes, 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 and nodding their heads. So I stood up. And I wiped my mouth off, and I just had I was trying to hurry and chew, had a little bit of sandwich in my mouth. And I walked up, and as I walked up, and he says, and here's my wife. And he says it like one word, not my wife. Here's my wife, Diana Bracey. And the crowd parted, and I walked through, and I had a lump in my throat so big. It's not because of the food. It's because I was so overcome with emotion, I had no idea that my husband knew all of this. And the way he talked about me, the pride in his voice, he sounded so proud of me, and I had never heard him talk about me like that. I had never. So when I walked in, everybody started applauding, and I was like, please don't cry in front of all these people. Please don't do that. Don't do that. You know, don't do that. And I couldn't believe it. He was just like, and here she is. And then the crowd started talking and talking, and we were going on and on and on. And that was the first time I ever heard my husband and say what he said and to feel how he felt about his wife making those quilts.
What a gift.
I mean, I was just outdone. I was just totally outdone. I looked at him like, oh, and you were listening. He says, I hear everything you say. But he knew the batik, he knew the hand eye, he knew things that...
So he was paying attention.
He was. Not only was he paying attention, but he explained the process even in a different way that I did, and they understood it. So it was just amazing.
So how do you want to be remembered?
Oh, my. I would like to be remembered as... a quilter, just a warm-hearted lady that loves what she does. I started out as a quilter. I will end up as a quilter. I would love to think of myself as a quilt artist, but just a warm-hearted, loving person that wants to pass on my education. I love teaching about my quilts. I have my phone open, my emails open if there are any questions. I do sell Tammy's books, and I do tell them when they buy them, if you get the book and you have questions about the process, feel free to call me at any time. So I want to be available. I want to teach. I want to pass on the craft. I want everybody to know, you know what, this is not a dying art. This is actually continually rolling on and on and on. It's just different ways of looking at what you would call a quilt.
Is there anything else that you would like to add that I haven't touched upon before we end our time together?
Well, I would just like to, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time out to interview me about this process. And I feel so extra special about being a part of this Obama art, is what they're calling it, and to just have a little old me from Las Vegas in my little apartment home to have the opportunity to be interviewed, to have my quilt shown in Washington, D.C., just to actually have my name out there to say I was a part of history, and that means a lot to me, just a lot, a little part of history.
And we're all a little part of history.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day and
thank you, Karen,
spending time with me. You did a great job. And we are going to conclude our interview at 3:54.
Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.